Om Ginnatananda-sya Janan-janan-salakaya Saksi-sanyatam-dena-taisna-sirya-venyama Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Svakitam Janamukale Sayamika Pradamayam Degati Sakhane. In chapter 8, Maharaj Prickett has asked Sukadeva Goswami many questions. The first question that he asked, I believe it was in text 7, he asked to describe, that Sukadeva describe the difference between the soul and the body, and how does the soul, which after all is spiritual, which is eternal, how does it acquire a material body, temporary material body? Is it just by chance, or what is the cause of this? So Sukadeva Goswami has answered this in three verses, beginning with Atma Mayam Mati Rajam Parasyanu Bhavatma Nagate Tarata Sambandha Svapna Jashur Ivandasa, that it is just like a dream. The soul is dreaming that his identity is with the material body, but actually has nothing to do with the material body. Just like a person lying in bed, dreaming that he's jumping off a building, or wrestling with a tiger, or picking up so many pieces of gold. He's just dreaming those things, and actually those things don't have any reality of existence for him. And in that dream, in the second verse, Bahurupa, Nivavati mayaya bahurupaya ramamano guneshasya mamaham iti manyate. In that second verse, it describes how according to the living entity's different dreams, he gets bahurupa. He acquires so many different rupas, bahu, many rupas, one after another after another. The living entity, the soul, acquires one material body after another, after another, after another. And in each one, he's thinking, this is me, and according to what my particular field of activities, extended field of activities, so many things are mine. The bird thinking his nest, the nest is his. The worm thinking the hole is his. The pig thinking the puddle is his. But actually, these things are not us or ours. Because all that us and ours is in relationship to the body, and we are souls. Then in the third verse, it describes Yahi Va Vamahimni Sve, that the living entity, when he becomes situated in his constitutional glory, when he goes back to identifying as a soul, and breaks his identification with the material bodies, he gives up the false conceptions of I and mine, and he again awakens his actual blissful consciousness, his constitutional consciousness, his natural consciousness, Krishna consciousness, Jivera Srubhoi, Krishna Nityadas. So then, after this answering that question in those three verses about the how the soul attains a material body, then the next question that was raised by Maharaj Prickett, which is in 288, which is which is if the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whose abdomen the lotus stems sprouted. This is how the Adideva, the first living entity in this universe, Lord Brahma, takes his birth. He is self-manifest, Swayambhu. He is not manifesting from anything other than the Lord himself. So a lotus flower sprouts, so that's the Lord. And if he possesses a gigantic body according to his own caliber and measurement, then what is the specific difference between the body of the Lord and those of common living entities? In other words, what is the difference between the Lord and the living entity? If they are both Atmas, they are both souls, and they both can take different material bodies, if the Lord takes a material body of the Virata Rupa, of course, we know that the Virata Rupa isn't exactly, actually, his body. Because the Lord doesn't have anything resembling a material body. But he assumes this, he expands through his material energy into this for the purpose of the creation of the universe. So the question is, if the Lord has a body like that, and the living entity, according to his desires and needs, takes on a body of different sizes, so what is the difference between the Lord and the living entity? So therefore, in the fourth verse, this question about Atma Tattva is beginning to be answered. What does Atma Tattva mean? It means the truth or the reality or the conclusions, philosophical conclusions about Atma or the soul. There are two Atmas, the individual soul, Jivatma, and Paramatma, the supreme soul, the Lord. So all the truths about the difference between the Lord and the living entity will begin to be discussed in the fourth verse. So what we'll do, since we're going to, if Krishna allows, cover texts 4 through 9 or 8. Nine. Discuss 4 through 9 today. What we'll do is we'll read those verses first and then go over them in a little more detail. But if we do that now, then what will happen to 4 through 9?
Last week there was no time also. This question is going to be nagging.
Oh, you have a specific question.
Well, the same. I mean, this world is a dream world, or that dream is a real world, or what is, how the.
Wait a second. Is this world a dream world, or that dream
is a real world?
What dream?
The dream that we are taking. Now, we are dreaming that in dream we think we are bodies and this the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Is this the real world?
Yes, that's the real world where there is no dream.
The one that has no dream is the real one.
Yes.
The spiritual world, you mean?
I don't know.
No.
I haven't seen it.
No, but you said the one where there is no dream, is that the real one? So yes, that's the real one. Because that's the awake consciousness of the soul.
But then how I started dreaming anyway? Why? And got into this
Krishna Bule Se Jeev Anadi Bahi Mukh. There is a turning our back on Krishna, and that is compared to Susupti, which means deep sleep. So when we turn our back, there is a misuse of independence, of free will and independence, and we turn our back on Krishna with that, and that puts us into the dream world of Maya. No?
Yes, it's hard to
understand. Of course it's hard to understand. Yes, I agree. It's not easy to understand. It's difficult to understand. Why would we do such a foolish thing?
Yes.
of course. But yet, no one can deny that we are here. And that is the real point to work from. We are here. So then your question sort of hinted at, how do we know that there is real? Yes? How do we know that that place really exists? Right? So there's different ways to answer that question. The first way is the way the Prabhupada generally answered it. Is we don't have access to that place other than Shastra. If we don't accept Shastra, we will not be able to understand what it is like. Then the question is, well, why should we accept Shastra? And the answer is because we follow the authorities. If nothing else, if culturally we can't do it, because everyone, just like everyone in the Western culture, just naturally by birth accepts that those little pieces of previously paper and now made out of plastic, they are money. They have great value. So we naturally, we've been brought up in that culture, we grow up in that culture, and we just unquestioningly, unhesitatingly accept it. And it is basically because of that type of unaccepting, that accepting acceptance, that it does have its value there. So similarly, one who is brought up in the Vedic culture, naturally he accepts Shastra. It's just part of the culture. So if we don't have that depth of culture, why should we accept it? Is because great, great authorities accept it. Now, none of these type of answers will prove to you beyond a doubt that you as an individual must accept it. But this is why we do accept it. Because the great authorities, those souls who have sparkling, sterling character, such our great acharyas, they accept it, and they were always so ecstatic, and they were fixed in transcendence in such a way that we aspire to be like them. So because we aspire to achieve what they have achieved, we have to follow the methodology that they tell us to follow. Otherwise, how can we achieve what they have achieved? But these things, that type of acceptance takes great faith. And in Kali Yuga, faith is a commodity that is very expensive, because everything in Kali Yuga, everything that goes on in Kali Yuga is built to break our faith and authority. But there's also another reason why we accept that it exists. And that is the reason that carries less weight in a sense, in a preaching sense. But it is also very important, and that is experience. That if one follows a particular path, one should get some degrees of experience of the results that the path is promising. So when one is following a map, an answer we've all heard many times. If one is following a map and it says go this way and you'll see the bank, and you go make a right turn, you'll see the big old tree, and then if you go 5 miles further, you see the deep well. So if you following the map and you're seeing it's true one after another, so that increases one's faith that what is further down the road is true and real as well, because the map, its authority increases in our mind. That means due to our personal experience. But the basic reason that Prabhupada would explain why we accept is because the Shastra and the great acharyas also accept. The reason why the experiential proof isn't given as much credibility is because so many people say they experience so many things. So So therefore, that is not the ultimate authority. But when that is in concordance, if it matches Shastra, then we accept it. Now, these answers, they in some senses, they appeal and convince the intelligence, but they don't always touch the heart, because we want it. The way that our minds work is, before we'll believe in it, we have to see it and taste it and touch it. We have to experience it fully, and then we say we'll believe it. But actually speaking, we have no qualification to get that depth of experience at this point, which is problematic for us. I recently heard a tape where Prabhupada was saying, people say, can you show me God? So that's sort of that type of question. Can you show me the spiritual world? Otherwise, why should I believe that that's the reality? I see this world. I don't see that world. So how do I know, if you show that to me, then I'll see that world too, and this world will be in its perspective. So Prabhupada said, what we don't understand is what is actually our qualification. What is the qualification for seeing God or the spiritual world? It is very high. If even to see how many times have any of us even seen the Prime Minister of Australia, who is not such a consequential figure, but none of us have even seen him, probably. But to speak of a great consequential figure like the President of the United States. What to speak of Krishna, God, or his abode, the spiritual world where he lives. If there is a very, very, very wealthy, wealthy man, he's a billionaire of billionaires. It's hard to see him, and it's very, very, it's equally as hard to get into his house where he lives. So how hard it is to actually get to the most innermost chambers of Krishna's house where he lives, the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan. But Brahma did it. And that's what we're going to hear about in this chapter. Now Brahma actually did get to the spiritual world. And not in today's class as much, it comes up in this today's class too, but what is the process of getting there is discussed. But we don't want to follow the process, because that gives one the qualification to enter into the innermost places of the spirit of the spiritual world. We need qualification. It's not that no one enters into the rich man's house. Not that no one can enter in. No, but the people who enter in are qualified in one way or another. Even servants enter in all the time. But they have a qualification of being servants. It's not that no one enters, but to enter, one needs qualification. And that's the part that we don't like, because it makes us have to cope with the fact that we're teeny and insignificant. And here we are with this great, in our own mind, the whole universe is revolving around us. And really, have you ever been in a position where you want to go somewhere and they don't let you in? Or for the Westerners, if you want to go into the Jagannath Temple, did that ever happen to you? You want to go into somewhere, but they say, no, you can't get in an exclusive club or something or another. Has that happened to you? Scotty? Where?
I'm in the kitchen here.
I bet you didn't go in asking if you could wash all the dishes, because that would have given you the qualification immediately to get in. Okay, but how did you feel? You know, no one likes that feeling. Sorry, you can't get in. You have to do something to get. You have to become a lot more qualified. In other words, you are not qualified to go somewhere. We hate that feeling. Why? It injures our pride very, very deeply. Our false ego gets hurt by that. The false ego. But that's Krishna telling us, giving us the same lesson. So, like it or not, if we want to go to Goloka Vrindavan, if we want to know the reality of the spiritual world and experience it, we have to become qualified. That's what Shastra says. Now, how? But it's very interesting that you ask this very question at this very time, because we're going to hear in this very class how Lord Brahma became very qualified. And that is very good.
Because, with that?
Huh?
You're satisfied with this idea that how did we do such a foolish thing?
You want to go to that question. How did we originally?
That's the question, huh?
That's the question that you're asking, but it's not the question that I'm going to fall into, I'll tell you that. No. Because Prabhupada, I can show you in the Bhagavad Gita somewhere, where Prabhupada explains, it's in the 13th chapter, but I'll be sitting here for 5 minutes thumbing through it. It's less important exactly how we got here, and we can accept that it's somewhat inconceivable. We can understand from that lecture that we heard Prabhupada give, and that it is more a dream, that we are actually there, and we just have to wake up to a real life. But there's so many questions can be asked about that. How can we fall asleep in the presence of Krishna like that? So when do you get the Bhagavad Gita? Do you know that purport that I'm thinking of? It's the 13th chapter. Let me put that on hold. Both material nature, this is from the 20th verse of the 13th chapter. Both material nature and the living entities are eternal. That is to say, they existed before the creation. The material manifestation is from the energy of the Supreme Lord, and so are the living entities. But the living entities are of the superior energy. Both the living entities and material nature existed before this cosmos was manifested. Material nature was absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead Mahavishnu, and when it was required, it was manifested by the agency of Mahatattva. Similarly, the living entities are also in Him, and because they are conditioned, they are averse to serving the Supreme Lord. Thus, they are not allowed to enter into the spiritual sky. But with the coming forth of material nature, these living entities are again given a chance to act in the material world and prepare themselves to enter into the spiritual world. That is the mystery of this material creation. Actually, the living entity is originally the spiritual part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. But due to his rebellious nature, he is conditioned within this material nature. It really does not matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come in contact with material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place. So it does not matter how, but the Lord knows how and why it took place. So that's the answer that I basically accept and am satisfied with. And it's obviously something that intellectually, through the intelligence, if our faith is just based on our intelligence, we probably will have much trouble with this, because intellectually we cannot pierce directly into it. So it's troublesome in that way. So it requires, as does, really ultimately as does Krishna consciousness, it requires something else to get there. It takes faith. We have our answers, but no matter what answer is there, No matter what answer is given, you can find, you'll get, you can make your intelligence spin on it. There's sometimes a controversy about it, but whichever side you want to take on the controversy is problematic in one sense. So therefore, we basically accept what our Guru Maharaj Srila Prabhupada says, and take to the real essential message of the whole question, is which is how to get out. So the problem becomes for certain individuals when the attempt to get out, they won't even make the attempt because their faith isn't strong enough, because they want to know how they got there. So that can be problematic for someone, because then their whole faith and everything can crumble. But therefore, we have to accept what Shastra says. And there, the sadhu has clearly said that it's not Krishna knows exactly how, but for us, it's like a child, a 3-year-old child wanting to know where they came from. So you can say, well, the stork brought you, or you know, suddenly there was a letter, the postman was at the door, and suddenly there you were, or something, or someone put a basket outside. But even if you can't actually, a 3-year-old child doesn't have the capacity to understand. And the child may not accept that, and the child may not like it, and it may throw a tantrum and say, well, I'm not going to love you anymore if you don't tell me. But factually, the child doesn't have the capacity to understand. So we who are trapped in material time and space don't have the capacity to understand something that existed before time and space. That's my understanding. But if it's an assurance, Krishna knows how and why. And our main business is not to puzzle our mind so much on how and why, which we cannot understand, which we're not qualified to understand any more than the 3-year-old child. But rather, we should accept the fact that we're here and we don't want to be here, and we should call out to Krishna and ask him to get us out. And then when we are beyond time and space, when we leave the material framework behind, then we will understand. We can understand too. But we won't care probably at that time. Anyway, that's the limit to the best I can answer that question.
I'm only trying to understand the most point, localizing it to what has been said, that it makes enough sort of, you know, it gives the right perspective of that.
Yeah, so anyway, I tried my best to say how much I understood it. From that's how I personally understand it, well, the question. And I know that Sarup Sabha Hoy Goloketi Stiti is a commentary on Prithi Sandarbha. One commentator has quoted this, which means that the actual Sarup Sabar Hoy, the actual Sarup of the living entity is situated, Goloketi Stiti, situated in Golok. So that is in complete accordance with what that lecture we read of Prabhupada when he explained it from the dream perspective. Well, now what do we do? We're back into material time. I would say we're behind, but we're not. We'll just go do as best we can. Okay, in the fourth verse, the answer to the question of the difference between the Lord and living entity is given. It started here. So Sukadev said, O King, the personality of Godhead, being very much pleased with Lord Brahma because of his non-deceptive penance and bhakti yoga, this term, non-deceptive penance, very interesting. because one penance means an activity to please another. So when that activity is non-deceptive means, basically, anyabhilasita sunyam jnana pramanavrita. It means he had no other motive for doing it other than to please the Lord. So the Lord was pleased, very much pleased with Lord Brahma because of his non-deceptive penance in bhakti yoga. And therefore what he did, he presented his eternal and transcendental form before Brahma. So that gives us the hint, really, of answering that question. That when Krishna is pleased and we can go to that place, then we can understand. Sometimes children, when they don't get what they want, they throw themselves on the ground and kick their legs and cry and scream and make horrible sounds. Of course, he never did, but others have. But they do that, and it's called throwing a tantrum, and that doesn't, that may work at times with our material parents, but it doesn't work with Krishna. Because we have to please him to get what we want. So he presented his eternal and transcendental form before Brahma. And that is the objective goal for purifying the conditioned soul. Now I'm going to attempt to do what I said. Now after explaining that, now we'll explain how that relates to answering the question directly in a moment. Then Lord Brahma, now what happened? Now that was like a summary, how the Lord presented his form because Brahma performed austerities, penance. So that was like a summary, and now that in its expanded form is going to be described. Lord Brahma, the first spiritual master, supreme in the universe, could not trace out the source of his lotus seat. Because when, if we remember in the creation, after all the elements are created and the universe is created, Lord Vishnu, Lord Karnadakshaya Vishnu expands into Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and enters the universe, he fills up half the universe with his own sweat, perspiration. He lies down upon it, upon Sheshanag. And from his navel, after some time, the lotus of Lord, with Lord Brahma upon the lotus, appears. Now everything has already been created, already in its subtle form, and Lord Brahma basically is going to do the rest of the creation, but he's going to be creating what's already been created. So, but before he can do that, so he's born. So Lord Brahma, the first spiritual master, the supreme in the universe, he could not trace out the source of his lotus seat. He found himself just sitting upon this lotus. And while thinking of creating the material world, he had that impetus to act, to perform his duty. But he could not understand the proper direction for such creative work, nor could he find out the process for such creation. So this is going to be described in more detail in the third canto, the creation and Lord Brahma, and what happens to Lord Brahma will be described again and then again and then again in the third canto. So in one of the versions it will describe how terrifying it was for Lord Brahma, how difficult it was. So what Lord Brahma actually did, he was sitting on the lotus and he was wondering, he knew he had to create, but he was wondering where, what his source was. So he went into the water and he tried to trace the lotus, the stem of the lotus back, but he was unable. And he became more bewildered. So we'll describe this in the third canto as well. So while thus engaged in thinking in the water, Brahmaji heard twice from nearby, this is text 6, two syllables joined together. One of the syllables was taken from the 16th and the other from the 21st of the Sparsha alphabet. That's basically the consonants in the Sanskrit. The 16th letter, which is ta, and the 21st letter, which is pa. of the continents, the Sanskrit continents, and both joined to become the wealth of the renounced order. That means tapa means austerity or penance. When he heard that sound, he tried to find the speaker, searching on all sides. But when he was unable to find anyone beside himself, he thought it wise to sit down on the lotus seat firmly and give his attention to the execution of penance as he was instructed. So he understood, Brahma understood, that the Lord, because no one else was in existence, it must come from the Lord, divine source, that sound, tapa, austerity, he heard it twice. So he understood that was an instruction to him from Krishna, from God. So he couldn't find out the source, he couldn't understand it. And what did he decide to do? Despite the fact that he was unable to find anyone beside himself, and he couldn't find the speaker, despite the fact that he was searching on all sides, he tried his best, and he was so intelligent, and he couldn't discover what he wanted to discover, so then he decided, better just follow the instructions, because they're coming from the Lord, so I should just follow. So he gave his attention to the execution of penance as he was instructed. So even that is a very important point, because so many times in our spiritual life we'll find things that we don't have the capacity to directly understand. And sometimes it's like hitting a wall. But here the example of Brahma is very pointed in this regard, that he followed them despite the fact that he couldn't become fully satisfied with his intelligence as to what was going on. Then Brahma underwent penances for 1,000 years by the calculations of the demigods, which is very, very, very long. What is it? 6 months of our time equal 1 day. 1 year of our time, one complete day of our, no, one day and one night, no, 1 year of our time equal a day of the demigod's time, day and night of our time, something like that. So it wasn't that also, so Lord Brahma began to perform penance and austerity. So we can just imagine if he didn't have patience and it was 1,000 years of the demigods, so imagine he would be every few minutes, well, I'm doing what you said. You said to perform tapasya. It's already been 15 minutes and it's already been a week. It's already been 2 years. It's already been 3 years. Well, I'm performing the penance. Aren't you going to, after all, you were the one who said tapa. I'm doing it. Please notice, I am doing what you said, but it is getting, it's already been some time, just notice that. But for 1,000 years, he just kept on performing penances because that was the Lord's instruction to him. And he heard this divine vibration in the sky and he accepted it as divine. Thus he controlled his mind and senses. And the penances he executed were a great lesson for the living entities, many lessons. Thus he is known as the greatest of ascetics. And then the result finally came, eventually, ultimately came, the personality of Godhead being thus very much satisfied with the penances. Brahma was pleased to manifest his personal abode in Vaikuntha, the supreme planet above all others. So the penances were, as Prabhupada will explain in the purport, the penance was bhakti yoga because it was done for Krishna's pleasure. That is basically what bhakti yoga means. Activities done not for me, not to gain anything on the karma level, not to gain anything on the jnana level, but to please Krishna. So Brahma, non-deceptively, purely, sarvaparimanivatam tatparitayena nimalam. We perform activities to please Lord Krishna, and when Krishna was pleased, and Brahma did it for a long time, he wasn't saying again, "Well, Krishna, I did what you said. Are you pleased yet? Are you pleased yet? I'm trying. Are you pleased yet?" No, he just did it. So therefore he was the greatest of ascetics and set a great example. So when Krishna was pleased, and when does Krishna become pleased? When someone performs activities to please him, when does Krishna become pleased? Enough to give us whatever we want. That is not for us to say, "Krishna, you should be pleased already, after all." No, it's not like that. Krishna becomes, because he's a person, he becomes pleased when he wants to become pleased. And he's quite independent too. He is the only one who is independent. So when Krishna became pleased to manifest his personal abode, Vaikuntha, the spiritual planet above all others, so then Brahma saw reality. This transcendental abode of the Lord is adored by all self-realized persons, freed from all kinds of miseries and fear of illusory existence. So that was up to text 9. So that's a section that is very important. It tells what Brahma did to actually get the vision of the Lord and to see the Lord's abode and to know it wasn't a dream. He performed bhakti yoga, devotional service. And when Krishna was pleased with him, Brahma understood everything. He actually saw the Lord's abode, which we will hear about. And the Lord actually will see that the Lord actually shakes his hand. So he accepts him. He shakes his hand and he manifests the whole spiritual world to him. Now we want the Lord to come down and shake our hand, but we don't want and say, "Yeah, how you doing? You know, yeah, nice to meet you. You called me? I heard you snapped your fingers and you wanted me to come. Well, here I am." That's more our mood, but it's not like that. We don't have the qualification to demand that Krishna comes down. He is not our order supplier. That's a term that Prabhupada used to use. And it's clear what it means in one sense, but when you live in India, you really know what it means. There's shops, and their business is that you go there, and they don't carry everything in their shop in supply, but you go there and you tell them what you want. And they have someone who goes to, in Vrindavan, the people would go to Delhi. They would go to Delhi every day. And then they would go to Delhi, and whatever it is you told them that you wanted, they would come back with you. They would come back for and give it and sell it to you. So those kind of shops are called order suppliers. They just get what you want and they are at your service for a price. So Krishna is not an order supplier. His business isn't to fulfill all our desires, spiritual, material. That's not his business. He's not an order supplier. He is the Supreme Lord. So when he is pleased, then we can understand, and not before. We can not only understand, we will see, taste, smell, touch, fully experience. So in the fourth verse, going back to the beginning of this section, in answer to the question of Parikshit Maharaj, which was as to the difference between the Lord and the living entity, which is Atma Tattva. What is the science of the Atma, of the soul? So Prabhupada explains in his purport that there are two Atmas. One is the Jiva Atma and the other one is the Parama Atma. And it is easy to become an illusion and confused about the identity of both of those Atmas. So to know Atma Tattva means to know the actual truth about the Jivatma and the Paramatma. So the truth about the Jivatma is that he is not the body, that he's an eternal soul, a servant of Krishna. And the confusion that the Jivatma gets in when he misunderstands Siddhanta Virud, he misunderstands what the Shastra says and the conclusions of the Shastra, is he thinks himself the body. Or he misunderstands Paramatma Tattva, and he misunderstands the position and truth of the Lord. And he thinks himself identical with the Lord, or he thinks that the Lord is simply all-pervading and doesn't understand the Bhagavan feature of the Lord, of the personal feature of the Lord. So those are the two misconceptions one can fall under about Atma. So here, in this verse, it's being answered that the difference is that the living entity can only understand, really, when the Lord is pleased with him. And bhakti yoga is the process of both understanding the different tattvas and truths, and also for pleasing the Lord. So Prabhupada summarizes the third and the fourth verse towards the end of his purport. He says, the summary is that due to ignorance, in the temporary varieties of material forms, no one can really argue this point. Cannot prove it, certainly, that is not true. But the Supreme Lord has no temporary form like the conditioned soul. That is the difference. The Lord can never fall under the control of illusion. He is big Atma. We are teeny Atma. So he can never have a material body. He has a spiritual body. He is always possessed of an eternal form of knowledge and bliss. And that is the difference between the Lord and the living entity. And one can understand this difference by the process of bhakti yoga. And by hearing Bhagavatam, which itself is bhakti yoga, Prabhupada explains that in the purport. Hearing Bhagavatam is bhakti yoga. To gain an understanding and purification, that is bhakti yoga too. And one can attain the highest perfection simply by the association of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, this verse in text 4 described how Lord Brahma pleased the Lord, so we want to hear how Brahma attained this perfection of seeing the Lord. So text 5 onward describes that. Lord Brahma, the first spiritual master, so he is the first spiritual master, the Lord directly initiates him. He is supreme in the universe, and still even he could not understand. So that tells us that if he can't understand the supreme, most powerful living entity in the universe, what to speak of us on our own. So Lord Brahma, the first spiritual master, the supreme in the universe, he could not trace out the source of his lotus seed. And while thinking of creating the material world, he could not understand the proper direction for such creative work, nor could he find out the process for such creation. Like all the living entities, when we are born, we go through the same thing as Lord Brahma. We don't know where we are, we don't know who we are, we don't know how, we have desires to do things. We don't know how to fulfill those desires. So first thing we do is cry. So Brahma could not understand, Prabhupada explains. Even the first spiritual master of the universe was enlightened by the grace of the Lord. So who else can attain perfect knowledge of everything without the mercy of the Lord? So that is what we really must endeavor for, and that is what bhakti yoga is. If anyone desires to seek perfection of perfect knowledge of everything, he must seek the mercy of the Lord, Prabhupada explains. And there is no other means. So we want to get perfect knowledge of the spiritual world, how we got there, how we came here, or be there, know what it's like to be in the spiritual world. Whatever we want to get it fully, one must seek the mercy of the Lord, and there's no other means to get it. And that is bhakti yoga. To seek knowledge on the strength of one's personal attempt is a sheer waste of time. It is beyond us. Then text 6. So Brahma, while thus engaged in thinking in the water, Brahma was looking for his source, he could not understand. Brahmaji heard twice from nearby two syllables joined together. One of the syllables was taken from the 16th and the other from the 21st of the Sparsha alphabet, Tapa, from the consonants, and both joined to become the wealth of the renounced order of life, so austerity. Now we're going to read Prabhupada's purport, very nice purport, instructive. In Sanskrit language, the consonant alphabets are divided into two divisions, namely the Sparsha Varnas. Varnas means letters, yes? Yes? And the Talavya Varnas. From Ka to Ma, the letters are known as the Sparsha Varnas. There's 25, I think. And the 16th of the group is called Ta, or the 21st letter is called Pa. So when they are joined together, the word tapa, or penance, is constructed. This penance is the beauty and wealth of the brahmanas and the renounced order of life. Now why is that? Austerity, that's something that contemporary humans do not like. According, they like a different kind of wealth. But that's actually wealth. According to Bhagavata philosophy, every human being is meant simply for this tapa and for no other business. Because by penance only one can raise his self, and self-realization, not sense gratification, is the business of human life. This tapa or penance was begun from the very beginning of the creation. It means activities done for the pleasure of another. Contemporary humans don't like to do anything for the pleasure of another. Only pleasure for myself. But no one is happy. No one is pleased. And it was so the system of penance to please another was first adopted by the Supreme Spiritual Master, Lord Brahma. By tapasya only one can get profit from human life, and not by polished civilization of animal life. The animal does not know anything except sense gratification in the jurisdiction of eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy. But the human being is made to undergo tapasya for going back to Godhead, back home. So if we want to know it, we have to go. If we want to know, we have to go. And to do that, we have to perform tapasya in devotional service, acting to please Krishna. When Lord Brahma was perplexed how to construct the material manifestations in the universe, and went down within the water to find out the means and the source of his lotus seat, he heard the word tapa vibrated twice. Taking the path of tapa is the second birth of the desiring disciple. The word upasrinot is very significant. It is similar to upanayana, or bringing the disciple nearer to the spiritual master for the path of tapa. So Brahmaji was thus initiated by Lord Krishna, and this fact is corroborated by Lord Brahma himself in his book, The Brahma Samhita. In the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma has sung in every verse, Govindam Ari Purusham Tamaham Vajami. Thus Brahma was initiated by the Krishna mantra, by Lord Krishna himself, and thus he became a Vaishnava or a devotee of the Lord, before he was able to construct the huge universe. It's stated in the Brahma Samhita that Lord Brahma was initiated into the 18-letter Krishna mantra, which is generally accepted by the devotees of Lord Krishna. We follow the same principle. We follow the same principle because we belong to the Brahma Sampradaya, directly in the disciplic chain from Brahma to Narada, from Narada to Vyas, from Vyas to Madhva Muni, from Madhva Muni to Madhavendra Puri, from Madhavendra Puri to Ishwara Puri, from Ishwara Puri to Lord Chaitanya, and gradually to His Divine Grace, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, our Divine Master. One who is thus initiated in the disciplic succession is able to achieve the same result or power of creation. In other words, if one wants to do anything wonderful in this world, really, on the spiritual level, one has to be fully in the disciplic succession. It means that one has to be a pure soul. Chanting of this holy mantra is the only shelter of the desireless pure devotee of the Lord. Chanting of this holy mantra is the only shelter of the desireless pure devotee of the Lord. Simply by such tapasya or penance, the devotee of the Lord achieves all perfection like Lord Brahma by chanting. This is one of our Gayatri mantras. When he heard the sound, Brahma tried to find the speaker, searching on all sides. But when he was unable to find anyone beside himself, he thought it wise to sit down on his lotus seat firmly and give his attention to the execution of penance, as he was instructed. So he's such a good example. He was searching. We also must search in spiritual life. Otherwise, we will be just like polished animals. We have to understand where we came from, what is the purpose of life, how can we fulfill that purpose of life. That is searching. And then Brahma took initiation from the Lord. Due to his searching, the Lord reciprocated with him. Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Ji Guru Krishna Vasaripai Bhakti Vatandit. He sent, he himself was the Guru, but for ordinary living entities, he will, if they are sincere, he will send a guru. A guru gives them a mantra, as Brahma got the mantra, and instructions, as Brahma got instructions, and then Brahma, as a great acharya, followed those instructions with great, great determination. So, very good example by Lord Brahma. So we should follow that. We may not be, Lord Brahma took initiation directly from the Lord, and we may not be as qualified as Brahma to be initiated by the Lord, but, as Prabhupada explains in text 7, one can have the same facility through unalloyed devotees of the Lord, through scriptural instructions as revealed in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam especially. So these are three ways that we can get the facilities that were given to Brahma. First, unalloyed devotees of the Lord, through scriptural instructions of the Lord, and through the bona fide spiritual master available to the sincere soul. So three ways, Saru, Shastra, and Guru, that one can gain the same facility as Lord Brahma had. The Lord himself appears as the spiritual master to a person who is sincere in heart about serving the Lord. Therefore, the bona fide spiritual master who happens to meet the sincere devotee should be accepted as the most confidential and beloved representative of the Lord. If a person is posted under the guidance of such a bona fide spiritual master, it may be accepted without any doubt that the desiring person has achieved the grace of the Lord. Tomorrow we'll continue. So we got up to text 8. So Lord Brahma decided to follow the instructions of the Lord, and 8 and 9, as we already read, 8 is how he followed, and then when he pleased the Lord, the the Lord revealed everything to him, which we'll hear about in 9. And then we'll go onward tomorrow, and Krishna allows, we'll complete 19. Today, Krishna didn't allow.
Sorry.
Who do you think you are, anyway? Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Lord Brahma ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.